Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This is continuing coverage in the trial of Alex Murdaugh from True Crime Today.
Welcome back to our continuing coverage, segment number 2 here in the trial of Alex Murdaugh on day number 16. Let's take you to the courtroom.
Very good. Thank you. Good morning. All right. Day number 18, state's case. I'll call your next witness.
May it please the court. Yes, sir. State of South Carolina, we call Special Agent David Owen to the stand.
Do you swear or affirm that any testimony you give today will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth from up you guys?
I do.
I'm going to state you with me. You see your desk seat there. Take your full name for the record, spell your last name, and move that mic or chair to where they can hear you best. Okay, Mr. John. Hold on a second. I'm going around the scene.
My name is David Owen, O-W-E-N.
Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Would you please tell the ladies and gentlemen about Special Agent David Owen?
Yes, sir.
Your background?
Yes, sir.
Where you're from and your education and training that led you into law enforcement? Please.
I was born and raised in Orangeburg, South Carolina. Graduated from Orangeburg High School. Graduated from Limestone College with a bachelor's in criminal justice. Began my law enforcement career in Orangeburg in 1996. Moved to Charleston in 1999, where I have been since. And began my career with SLED in SLED South Carolina Law Enforcement Division in 2015.
What have you worked different areas at SLED?
No, sir. My entire time in SLED has been with the Lowcountry region, which encompasses 12 counties. We do general investigations, assisting the 12 counties with whatever they request. Anything from public corruption, officer-involved incidents, violent crimes, property crimes.
And when you say assist local counties, I know what that means, but what does it mean in your world?
SLED is an assisting agency. I like to explain it as if you call 911 for an emergency, you're going to receive local assistance from the police department or the sheriff's office. SLED's not necessarily going to show up unless requested from the local police chief or the sheriff.
And that's, is that done regularly and has it been done regularly in your career where you've been called upon to assist local agencies?
Yes, it is.
And just as an aside, as we've got to know each other recently, you've got some relatives in Anderson that I knew in high school, didn't you?
Yes, sir.
Small world.
Small world.
Let's go straight to June 7th, Special Agent. Were you on call June 7th of 2021?
Yes, sir, I was.
And how'd you get the call?
I received the call approximately 10:30 that night. I was in bed trying to go to sleep, and phone rang and was told that I needed to respond to 4147 Moselle Road in Islington, Colleton County. That there had been the discovery of 2 deceased persons at that location.
And how long did it take you to get to 4147 Moselle?
I arrived on scene approximately midnight.
I'm sure it's been said, but it's 4147 Moselle in Colleton County.
Yes, sir, it is. Okay.
Now, when you arrived, tell these ladies and gentlemen what you observed.
When I arrived, there were multiple law enforcement and rescue personnel on scene. Of course, I had to find a place to park out of the roadway. Made my way up to the scene. My normal course of business, or the procedure, being that we're a requesting agency, I locate the agency that requested us, this being Collington County, and speak with the supervisors or detectives on scene and say, hey, what's going on? What have you learned so far? What do you need from us? At that time, one of my supervisors, my captain, Ryan Neal, was on scene, and he was already talking with Collington, so I was briefed on the situation, what was discovered and what had been done so far.
And did you have a liaison, somebody that you requested or told to work with on the scene that night?
Yes, sir. Originally, as I stated, we were called in to assist. So I was paired up with Detective Laura Rutland with the Collington County Sheriff's Office, and I was to assist her in any fashion that she needed.
And again, was that unusual for a local agency to call you in to help with the crime scene?
No, sir. It happens very frequently.
And when you got with Ms. Rutland, tell the folks when you were first at the scene, did you make observations in your mind of the scene itself?
Yes, sir. I observed the scene, kind of figure out what's going on, started walking the outside of the scene, trying to understand the lay of the land, figuring out if anybody had been interviewed already, what methods or avenues were being taken to try to figure out what's going on, secure the area, and whatnot.
And did you see the bodies and we're all of Paul and Maggie?
Yes, sir. I was standing outside the crime scene tape, and you know, what I know now to be Paul Murdoch and Maggie Murdoch, I knew that there was a white male and a white female, but they were covered up with a sheet. I was not able to see them, but I saw where they were.
Did you make any other observations of the actual crime scene there itself then?
Other than the placards or evidence placards that Collington County had put out to protect evidence upon their initial arrival, I didn't go into the scene. Our crime scene unit had not arrived yet. I have a background in crime scene, so I knew not to go in and disturb anything until it was documented properly. I was aware that Collington County had already documented or located and marked some evidence for protection purposes, so I just walked around the crime scene tape. I knew the kennels, there were dog kennels on the left. There was a big shed on the right with a large field behind it with another shed. And there were several people and several cars back behind, what I call back behind the crime scene from where I was standing.
And at this point, had you seen the defendant, Alex Murdoch?
I was told that he was with the group of people behind, which was told to me to be some family members and some of his law partners.
And I guess you became, at this point, were you the chief investigating officer?
I don't recall how long, within maybe 30 minutes or so, my supervisors pulled me aside and said, you know, hey, we're actually going to be the lead on this. So my Detective Rutland and my roles kind of reversed, and I became the lead investigator, and she was my assistant.
Y'all still working together?
We were still working together, yes.
Had you ever worked with her before?
No, sir. I knew her, but I had never worked with her before.
Did you think it was important to talk to Alex Murdoch?
I did.
And can you tell the jury specifically how that came about?
I was told that he arrived on scene and discovered his wife and son, and that he had made the 911 call. Being that it was his wife and son, and he found the bodies and made the 911 call, it was paramount that I talk to him. You know, what was his observations? What's going on in his life? What's going on in Maggie and Paul's life? To try to figure out what happened. I still didn't know if it was. Let me back up just a minute. Going into a death scene investigation, homicide investigators are taught to treat every scene as a homicide until determined otherwise. And that encompasses suicide, natural, accidental, or homicide or unexplained. So automatically I was treating it as a homicide, and I didn't know if it was or not. So it was paramount that I speak with Alec Murdoch to try to determine what he saw, what he experienced, what's going on in their lives, to kind of help guide my investigation as it progressed.
And had the weather started to change about that time?
It had been changing and continued to change. It was raining intermittently as I was coming into Walterboro from Charleston. It would stop raining. It would mist rain. It would heavy rain. So, you know, the weather was also a concern that night, especially being an outside scene.
And that leads into my next question. Did you, where did you request and where did you take the first statement from Alex Murdoch?
When I met Alec Murdoch, there was really nowhere else to interview him except the privacy of my patrol car, which was a Dodge Durango.
And we all seen the video, and I'm not going to play it again. The jury will have that. But can you tell us where is your car?
Yes, sir.
So we've seen the video. Where was the camera?
It was a body camera. It's not a fixed in-car camera like in most active patrol cars. But I clipped it to my visor right above me and just angled it towards Mr. Murdoch.
And is that your practice to video when you're potential suspects or you video?
I video any witness or audio record any witness that I am able to do.
So you're in your driver's seat?
Yes, sir.
Where was the defendant, Mr. Murdoch?
Mr. Murdoch was sitting to my right in the front passenger seat.
And behind him?
Behind him was Detective Rutland.
Okay, and to her left, if you will?
To her left and behind me was Danny Henderson. At that time, I knew he was an attorney, but I didn't realize his involvement other than an attorney. Later on, I found out that he was a partner and Alec Murdoch's personal attorney.
And how did he get in the car?
Who got in the car?
I say, how did...
Mr. Murdoch?
No. Danny, get in the car.
I mean, it's common if there's an attorney present that wants to be involved in the interview or sit on the interview, I allow them to sit in the interview. It's not an issue for me.
You said it was fine?
It was fine.
Okay. And I want to ask specifically about your observations of the defendant as far as his mind. Mm-hmm. Did he appear to be under the influence of anything? Any intoxicant or anything else when you were talking to him?
I did not notice any intoxicants, whether it be drugs or alcohol. He didn't smell of alcohol. His eyes weren't, you know, any dilated. They weren't bloodshot. He seemed of full body and mind, other than being distraught that he had discovered his wife and son dead.
Did you have trouble understanding his words?
No, sir, I did not.
Did he appear to have trouble understanding your words?
No, sir, he did not.
Were his answers to your question subject matter appropriate?
Yes, they were.
Okay. And were they timely?
Yes.
And again, without going to the details, did he tell you roughly what happened earlier in the evening, how long he'd been at the house, when he left, and when he came back?
Yes, sir. We went over his evening.
And after this statement, before that, did you, when you were out, before you got in your car, were you able just to look at him?
Yes, sir.
Did you shake his hand?
I did shake his hand.
And did you come up to him and y'all shook hands like that?
Yes, sir. I introduced myself.
What did he say when you introduced yourself?
How you doing? I don't remember exact words, but you know, how you doing? I know you need to talk to me, that type language.
And could you see anything just from your naked eye? I know you didn't have a microscope, but could you see anything that appeared to be, how'd his clothes look?
He had on a white t-shirt. I didn't notice anything out of the ordinary on his t-shirt. He had on green cargo khaki type shorts and I think bright in color. I think later I learned they're orange or pink tennis shoes. I didn't notice anything out of the ordinary about his appearance.
After you took this statement, you and Ms. Rutland, did you want to take his clothes?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And did you take his clothes?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Tell the jury how that went about.
Well, it was coming close to the end of the interview, and I was going to discuss collecting his clothes from him, but he had received a call that his oldest son was arriving at the home. Knowing that he needed to go be with his son, I said, I'll catch up with you later. Go ahead. Shortly thereafter, maybe 10, 15 minutes, I went up to the house and told him I needed to get his clothes. I was allowed into the house. There were multiple people inside the house. When you walk in the house, there's a foyer. I walked into the foyer. Immediately to the left, some stairs going upstairs. To the right, I believe it was a dining room, and you walk into the living area or living room. Met Mr. Murdoch again, told him I needed to collect his clothing. He went to what I now know is the master bedroom towards the left of the house, left of the living room, and he said, sure, and immediately began to disrobe his clothes and hand them to me.
All right, so did you go to the bedroom?
Yes, sir. I stood in the doorway of the bedroom.
So if that's his bedroom, you stood right here?
Yes, sir.
And could you see him changing?
Yes, I did.
And but did you give him a little privacy?
I did.
And so did he give you the same clothes that he had on?
Yes, sir.
You're sure about that?
He still had on the oranges, pink tennis shoes, green shorts, and white t-shirt.
And this is what's been entered as 419. Those are the tennis shoes that you saw the defendant Alex Murdahl in, and that
yes, sir.
He this, took off and gave to you.
Under this light, it's more red, but you know I considered it oranges pink that night. But these are the shoes that I collected from him.
Do you remember the condition? I mean, how did they feel when you touched them?
I mean, they were a little damp. I mean, it was raining that night.
You said damp?
Damp, yes. It was raining that night. Summertime, high humidity, so the ground was there was a lot of condensation and water on the ground. And these are the bag. This is the bag that I would have put them in. My initials are not on them, but my handwriting says shoes 0140. So that would it was 0140, which would have been the time that I collected the shoes.
Is that 1:40 a.m.?
Yes, sir.
On June 8th, 2021.
Yes, sir.
Did you make any other observation? Did you? There appear to be any other stains to your naked eye on those shoes when you saw them at 1:40 a.m. on June 8th, 2021?
No, sir. I did not make any other observations.
You'd leave your gloves on.
Yes, sir.
I'll show you what's been entered as 418 and tell me if you recognize this and does it relate to your testimony.
This is a bag that's sealed up, but I know that it's a t-shirt. It's got my writing on it with the time of 0141 or 1:41 a.m. Again, my initials are date or not on it, but I do recognize my signature or my writing.
You put 1:41 a.m. on
it? Yes, sir.
Now, had you packaged those clothes separately?
Yes, I did.
Okay. Why?
Again, with my experience in law enforcement, my experience in crime scene, anytime you collect a piece of evidence, you keep it separate so you don't cross-contaminate.
And that was the shirt?
Yes, sir.
Okay. What is also contained in 418 that's been entered? Can you tell me what that is?
These are the shorts, 0141 in my handwriting. Again, my initials and date are not on it, but I do recognize my handwriting.
Would you open those, please?
Yes, sir.
Now, are those the pants that you saw defendant Alex Murdaugh wearing on June 7th, June 8th?
Yes, sir.
Of 2021?
Yes, sir.
And those are the same pants that you took off of yes, Alex Murdaugh, is that correct?
You want gloves? No, I want gloves.
Now, describe when you saw these pants on June 7th, June 8th, early a.m. morning, Special Agent David Owen. How did they look to you?
Green shorts. I didn't notice any stains on them. Nothing was very apparent to the naked eye. They appeared just to be normal, clean shorts.
And we've got these cuttings in the front. Those weren't there, were they?
No, sir. They were complete shorts. Those cuttings were done during processing, evidence processing. Yes, sir.
At some point, maybe toward the end, I can't remember. I think it's toward the end. You kind of reach over and just do like this to Alex Murdaugh. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I consoled him. He was upset.
And that's just, you did that because that's you?
That's just who I am.
And when you got to the house and after you had collected these clothes, did you do anything else at the house?
I didn't do anything at the house. Like I stated, there were other people in the house, law partners, family members, people moving about. I did look around to make general observations. Nothing seemed out of the ordinary. Nothing seemed torn up or out of place. It was the first time I'd ever been in there, but it didn't look like there was a fight or a scuffle or going in, being observant, I didn't notice. I went in through the front door, was the only door I accessed the house from. I didn't notice any forced entry or, when the door was open for me, it was opened as a normal door should. Met Mr. Murdaugh and collected the clothing. I don't know if I spoke with Mr. Murdaugh or someone else inside the house. I think it was Mr. Murdaugh, excuse me. He had indicated early on in one of the initial interview that he had attempted to contact some of Paul's friends, and one of those friends was Nolan Tootin. And he had indicated that Nolan was at the house during that interview. So when I went to the house to collect the clothing, I asked if Nolan was present. He said, yes, he was, and pointed to him. I noticed that he was sitting on a couch in the living room. So I introduced myself to Nolan and conducted an interview with Nolan, again, in my vehicle for privacy.
So you had located Nolan Tootin in the residence and then conducted an interview with him in your car?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And were they, how many people were in the house? We're into the early morning of June 8th of 2021, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay, how many people were inside approximately?
I didn't go in every room. I didn't see every single person, but, 8-10 people from, first glance.
And had someone at SLED, you mentioned there was crime tape, did someone from SLED arrive at the crime scene where the two bodies were, and were they processing that?
Yes, sir, they were.
Okay. And did SLED and or the locals have that secure?
Yes, sir. There were several investigators from Collin County, two other investigators from my office, Agent Altman and Agent Wiggins were there. My lieutenant, Charles Gent, arrived on scene, as well as my captain was already there when I arrived. So there were several officers, several investigators down at that scene.
And was that scene secured and guarded until all the potential evidence at that crime scene was collected, as far as you know?
As far as I know, yes, sir.
Now, there was also a vehicle down there. Did you determine where the defendants, if he personally had a vehicle that he'd been in that night?
Yes, sir. There was a dark in color Chevrolet Suburban down there.
What, if anything, was done with that vehicle that night?
Early the next morning on Tuesday, June 8th, once we completed the scene around the kennel area and sheds, that vehicle was secured and towed to the Collin County Sheriff's Office so that it may be later processed.
So it was taken into law enforcement custody?
Yes, sir.
All right. There's been pictures and testimony about the phone that was on Paul.
Yes, sir. Once I left the house, our crime scene units, that what they go in to a scene and they look for evidence, document evidence, and collect evidence before anybody really goes in to manipulate the scene from there or alter the scene. So once a majority of the evidence, or all the evidence, not all the evidence, a majority of the evidence on approach to the victims were documented and collected, we went in and started investigating the bodies. The coroner was, of course, with us. And once we took the sheet off of Paul, there was a cell phone that was placed on his rear end and on his right side.
And if you'll think back to your first interview, you'd already had your first interview.
Yes, sir.
How did the defendant tell you that phone had got on his backside?
Mr. Murdoch stated that, you know, he tried to check Paul for a pulse and he, you know, tried to turn him over but thought better of it. And when he did, Paul's phone popped out of his pocket. And Mr. Murdoch had picked the phone up and stated that he thought of, not the exact words, but this is what he said, was he thought of doing something up with it, thought better of it, and put it back down.
Popped out of his pocket?
Yes, sir.
And what did you do with that phone?
Once it was photographed and documented that it was on Paul's rear end, I collected the phone. Our crime scene unit doesn't normally collect electronic devices. They don't process the electronic devices. It's normally the case agent or one of the agents on scene will collect that phone. So I collected the phone. When we collect electronic devices, we normally put them in airplane mode, disconnect any power sources, take out SIM cards. Once I collected Paul's phone, I attempted to put it in airplane mode, and of course you have to try to activate it. I noticed that it had a dead battery and would not power on at all. So I secured it as evidence in my vehicle.
You attempted to put it in airplane mode, why?
So that any outside sources, if someone has your access to your phone, like your iCloud account or your Google account, if you have an Android phone, you could remote access and wipe the phone, or anybody could, or, you know, some of the newer phones, you can use a location service, even though the phone is off, to find where that phone is. So we put it in airplane mode and pull the SIM card out. But with the, like I said, with the battery being dead, I couldn't put it in airplane mode.
Did Paul's phone become, or was it a significant piece of evidence in this case?
Yes, it was.
How long did you stay there once you got there? At the 4140 Moselle.
I believe I left about 8:30, 9 o'clock the next morning.
So you stayed all night?
Yes, sir.
And did the crime scene unit down where Paul and Maggie were stay all night?
Yes, sir.
So night becomes day, obviously.
Yes, sir.
Did you see anybody else at the scene that morning that you had an occasion to conduct an interview with?
Approximately 7 a.m. Y'all heard about C.B. Rowe, the farmhand, the employee of Mr. Murdoch. He was the farmhand. He arrived on scene. We confronted him and said, hey, we need to speak with you. So earlier in the interview with Mr. Murdoch, he said that CB had, or I call him CB, Mr. Rowe had not worked on Monday, that he was had taken his father. And he relayed a story about Mr. Rowe having a conversation with Paul, where, you know, he was hired by FBI out of high school to be some killer operative. So of course that kind of piqued my interest, and I needed to figure out where he was on yesterday or even that night. So Mr. Rowe, when he showed up, immediately went into an interview with him, got his alibi, got his statement of his events on Monday, where he corroborated that he had to take his father to the hospital or to the doctor in Mount Pleasant on that Friday, that Monday, and that he was not there on Moselle property.
And let me go back just a minute. At some point, the bodies of Maggie and Paul were taken away from the scene, right?
Yes, sir. The coroner took custody of the bodies. And
that's the law. The coroner comes in and
yes, sir.
Takes custody, right?
Yes, sir.
And But prior to leaving, were you able to observe from your own eyes around the bodies of Paul and Maggie?
Yes, sir.
And how would you describe those?
Very gruesome, very bloody.
Bloody?
Very, yeah, very
so
bloody.
Around the bodies, bloody.
Yes, sir. And also to, well, around Paul, it was more bloody because he was on concrete and in a rock driveway. And it had been raining that night, so you add the water to the bodily fluids, it's going to make them run a little bit more or spread more. Maggie was on dirt, grass, so it's going to seep into the ground. So there wasn't as much blood around her as was under her.
And did you, and without going into what he said, I think he's testified, did you interview Rogan Gibson?
I did not interview Rogan Gibson.
Was he interviewed?
He was interviewed. Morning? He was interviewed on June 8th, yes.
Interviewed what?
He was interviewed on June 8th, yes.
Okay. So y'all are investigating?
Yes, sir.
Working with the locals?
Yes, sir.
Interviewing people?
Yes, sir.
Did you try to determine or did you request anybody to check the videos in the area?
Yes, sir. Back up, after interviewing Mr. Rowe, Dale Davis, who was the dog, took care of the dogs, also arrived on, and we interviewed him, tried to get some information. Once we finished those interviews, our crime scene was done. We responded back to our Low Country office here in Walterboro. Collin County Sheriff's Office was there, 14th Circuit solicitors and their investigators were present, as well as most of our office and other agents that we called in, so we can relate to them what we had learned so far and what needed to be done. So we started assigning tasks to other agents in Collin County Sheriff's Office to go back out and start canvassing the neighborhood. You know, normally you would canvass the neighborhood when you're out there at night, and some agents were, but 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, most people are sleeping. It's out, also the country, it's dark. You don't really get the lay of the land. So you go back the next day when it's daylight. So we sent Collin County out, and they went from one end of Moselle Road to the other, attempting to locate video surveillance, talk to neighbors, see if they heard anything, saw anything, having any problems with burglaries, robberies in the area, anything to develop a lead that we could track down.
You were searching for any potential killers?
Yes, sir.
Did the search of the videos and the surrounding areas produce anything?
No, sir. Not many homes are close to the road out there, and the ones that did, not all of them had video or video surveillance. The ones that did that we saw were at night, you can tell a car is passing, but you couldn't tell the make, model. You couldn't see the tag number, so it was really useless.
But y'all tried?
We tried, yes, sir.
Okay. And I think you said after David, and he testified yesterday, when you talked to Rogan Gibson, is that when you first learned about a conversation where he may have heard some voices?
Yes, sir.
I mean, that morning you heard that from him?
But Agent Croft and Agent McAllister interviewed Rogan Gibson. I believe it was sometime mid-morning or lunchtime. And me being the lead agent, everything that they learned, they report back. So I learned later on that afternoon that they had interviewed Mr. Gibson, and that Rogan had relayed a conversation that he had had with Paul on the phone about an injured dog, and that Rogan had requested a video, and that during the phone call, what Rogan had heard in the background.
Paul, Maggie, and 99% sure, Alex?
Yes, sir.
Some point on June 8th of 2021, was the big house, or the main house, if you will, searched by law enforcement?
Yes, sir. Agent Croft and Agent McAllister, upon their completion with Rogan Gibson, they went back to the house, spoke with those that were present. I believe they spoke with Attorney Lee Cope, which is a law partner of Alec Murdoch's, as well as Alec's brother, John Marvin. They told them while they were there they wanted to search the house for evidence, and they were given consent, and that search commenced.
Did we get Alex's phone that night?
No, sir.
Okay. Now, June 8th becomes June 9th. You're investigating, correct?
Yes, sir.
Working with the locals?
Yes, sir.
Everybody's getting leads to follow?
Yes, sir.
Did you have an occasion to speak with
Alex Murdaugh again?
Yes, sir. On June 9th, I contacted John Marvin Murdaugh, Alex's brother, and stated that we needed to sit down and have a more proper interview.
What do you mean by that, more proper?
Right after a tragic event, you want to get as much information as possible. But you can imagine that speaking with somebody who's experienced a tragic event, they're not going to remember everything. Later on, once they have time, kind of memory reset, they're going to have more details. They're going to be thinking a little bit more clear. So we scheduled an additional interview, which took place on June 10th with Alec Murdaugh and his brothers, to see what they may have known, what they may have experienced in their lives that may have led to this. I mean, you know, at that time, you don't have any information. You've got to go out and talk to everybody, or as many people as you can.
And when you talked, we've seen it, and again, I'm not going to play it again. The jury's got it. But that second interview, who was there?
With me was Alec Murdaugh again in the front seat. Agent Jeff Croft was sitting behind Alec, and Alec's attorney, Jim Griffin, who is at the defense table, was also in the vehicle too.
And I think this was a voluntary statement by the defendant, right?
Yes, sir, it was.
Okay. No question that it was voluntary. He wanted to give it, and you wanted to ask him questions.
Yes, sir.
And I have to, because it just comes out. Could you understand him?
Yes, sir.
Did he appear to be under the influence of any alcohol, drugs, or other intoxicant?
No, he did not.
Okay. Did he have trouble understanding David Owen when he was asking him questions, in your mind?
In my mind, he wasn't. Again, if I wasn't clear, I think he said, excuse me, or, you know, say that again if he didn't hear what I said. And, of course, I repeated myself. But it wasn't that he didn't understand me. It was more so that he didn't hear me.
And could you understand his words, and were they appropriate to your answer, to your questions?
Yes, they were.
Okay. And there's a colloquy between all of y'all and Mr. Griffin at several points on the interview, right?
Yes.
Did he appear to be clear in his mind, is what I'm saying?
Yes, sir.
And this was how many days? Well, first of all, when you talked to him that first statement, how long was it after the 911 call?
I spoke with him, interviewed him just before 1 a.m. on June 8th, and the 911 call came in on that Monday night. Approximately 10:06 p.m.
Well, that's just a few hours.
Yes, sir.
Would you say it was fresh in his mind then?
Yes, sir, I would.
And this second interview was on what day and time?
June 10th.
Okay. And what time was the second?
1:30-ish. Hang on just a minute, sir. It began approximately 1:45 p.m. I'm sorry, 1:54 p.m.
The first and the second interview, Special Agent David Owen, based on your being there and listening and asking questions, was the defendant clear about whether or not he had gone back down to the kennels after he went to the house?
No, sir.
Was he clear that he had not gone back down there?
Yes, sir.
Well, that was clear. He hadn't gone down there.
That was clear.
You actually leave.
Can't leave the witness.
Did you have trouble understanding that?
No, sir, I did not.
And was it clear where he'd gone after that?
Yes, sir.
Based on your questions.
Went to visit his mother in Alameda.
And when he came back?
When he came back, yes, sir.
And that's the 12th.
That
second
June,
interview?
June 10th.
10th. I'm sorry.
Yes, sir.
I was getting there. Did you collect the defendant's phone that day?
I asked for consent to do a cell phone extraction. Dylan Hightower with the 14th Circuit actually conducted that extraction. And he conducted a logical extraction while Mr. Murdaugh was being interviewed.
Conrad's expert on phones. What's logical extraction mean?
So there's two types of, I'm not a cell phone expert, but what I understand is logical extract. There's two types, logical and physical. Logical, it's basically the surface of your phone. You get phone calls, text messages, emails, photographs, very basic information. The physical extraction, you get more files on the phone, such as orientation change, your steps, more intricate, more information with the physical extraction.
So on the 10th, working with the 14th Circuit Solicitor's Office investigator, y'all got a logical extraction?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And was the phone given back then?
Yes, sir. upon the completion of the extraction, it was given back, yes.
But you're working with the local officials at this point, correct?
Yes, sir.
After that, did you have an occasion to talk with Marion Proctor and her family without saying what they said?
Yes, sir. I'm not sure the exact date, but it was sometime that week or the following week that I spoke with Marion Proctor and her husband.
And was Maggie Murdaugh's Mercedes processed?
Yes, it was.
Okay. Did y'all obtain search warrants?
Yes, sir, we did.
Would you dispute if I told you that was June 15th for social media, financial records, and to search the ponds of Moselle and surrounding areas?
No, sir.
And did y'all do that?
Yes, sir, we did.
You actually went out and searched?
Yes, sir.
How'd you search the ponds?
We had sled dive team come down. Once they arrived and kind of surveyed the pond, it wasn't deep enough for them to actually dive, so they just waited. They had, hip waders on, so they were walking around basically on their hands and knees, searching the pond. There were some other waterways and ponds on the property that were searched, and I believe they went back the next day to complete searches. Also around that area, because going into Hampton, it's a swampy area, the Salcatchie River, the Little Salcatchie River, those areas were searched. Also that same day that the ponds were searched, we did a land search. In conjunction with Collington County, they had ATVs, UTVs, 4x4s, and we were searching the property looking for any evidence that might help us develop leads or point us in the right direction in the investigation.
So sled's working?
Yes, sir.
Working with locals?
Yes, sir.
And was the property searched again on June 16th?
Yes, sir.
And where was that?
That's when the dive team returned and completed their search of the waterways and ponds.
And it's also, there were some blackout cartridge casings and some shotgun shells that were seized later, correct, also?
Yes, sir. The pond that was, the first pond that was searched is by the shooting range or the shoot house across Moselle from the main house. So going back to June 8th, when Agent Croft went back out to the house and they conducted the search, he located some additional 300 blackout shell casings. We knew there was a shoot house by the ponds, so we went over there and located the 300 blackout shell casings inside the shoot house, as well as some shot shells from shotguns by the pond, and those were collected.
Did you end up talking with the pathologist?
Yes, sir.
Did you have an occasion to speak with where Maggie Murdaugh might have been on June 7th? With any place you might have visited?
Yes, sir. According to the statement that Alec gave me, that she was seeing that she had been to Charleston to see a doctor, and he gave me a name. I did some research, and being from Charleston, I was familiar with the doctor and the location. So I went by and spoke with the doctor, and they said they verified that she was there that day. They told me what she was wearing, which is the clothing she was found in that night. She didn't appear to be in any distress. It appeared to be a normal visit. I didn't get into what the visit was, but it was a normal visit for them.
And days are becoming a week, and you're moving on. Did you talk with the defendant Alex Murdaugh again during this time period?
A few times, yes, sir.
A few times?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Well, do you remember on July 28th meeting him at the Colleton County Sheriff's Office?
Yes, sir. I believe it was a few days prior to the 28th. He had contacted me. We still had custody of his Suburban, and he was seeking to have his Suburban returned to him. I indicated to him that it was inoperable. I was unable to return it to him. And he asked to get some personal belongings out of there. I believe he had some clothing and some golf clubs in there. And he was going on vacation with Maggie's family and needed his golf clubs.
So he called about his car?
Yes, sir.
I mean, that was the point of his phone call?
He asked about the investigation as well. Well, he asked about the investigation later on the 28th when I did meet with him and to, let him get some of the clothing and some of his belongings out of the Suburban. He indicated to me that he had some questions and wanted to know about the investigation. And I said, well, I have some additional questions as well. I said, I think I had another another interview scheduled. I said, I can't meet with you right now. Can we meet sometime tomorrow? And he stated, and again, he stated no, that he was going out of town. And I said, well, go with your family, take a relaxing vacation. When you return, give me a call, let's schedule something, and we'll sit down. A few days later, I believe it was August 3rd or August 4th, he returned my phone call and said, I'm back, let's schedule something. And we scheduled a date for August the 11th.
So he called, asked about the case, the car. You said you couldn't meet, I could meet with you tomorrow, and he said he couldn't, he's going on vacation?
Yes, sir.
He gets back, y'all agree on a date to, for another interview?
Yes, sir.
And specifically, what had you told him about that interview, or what did he ask you about that interview prior to this, prior to actually the interview?
About setting up the interview?
Yes, sir.
He just stated he had some questions. He wanted to know what we were doing, where we were at, if we had any information. And I told him that we didn't have a whole lot, and I had some questions that I needed clarification on, and I needed to sit down with him.
Now, and prior to this, had y'all collected a bunch of buckless arms?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Why?
Well, when our crime scene agents, when they processed the scene, they looked for touch DNA. Of course, you can't see it, so you're just thinking, okay, where could somebody have touched? I know they swabbed door handles, and they swabbed different areas. Evidently, there was the shell casings and the shot shells. There were no weapons found that night by the bodies, so we didn't have those to test other than the shotgun that Alec had taken, gone and gotten from the house during the 911 call. And at that time, you know, I wasn't familiar with the Murdoch family. I didn't know the Murdoch family, but I knew that there was a large boat case. There was an issue where Paul had been charged or indicted on the boat accident and the death of Mallory Beach. So, you know, that's a catastrophic event for that family. So, you know, you immediately think, okay, well, that's something big, so that needs to be addressed as well. And, you know, I have friends and family over at my house all the time. So their DNA is going to be there. I knew that Alec had friends and family at his house all the time, especially law partners. I saw them there. So if I'm going to start collecting DNA, I need to eliminate the ones that I know were there. So you start going out to friends and family, talking to people in the boat case that were on the boat that night, trying to document their alibis and getting their DNA to make sure, you know, to, you know, if we find an unknown, is it them?
So you were trying to either rule in or rule out any other possible suspects?
Yes.
And who brought up the boat case first in this case when you got involved? When's the first time you heard about it?
During the 911 call. Alec mentioned it in the 911 call. He mentioned it to Sergeant Green when he arrived. He mentioned it to me during the interview.
And so you followed up on that? Mm.
Yes, I did. Or yes, we did.
We did. I missed all, I watched it, but some testimony with the pathologist about possible scenarios. What guns were found at or near Maggie and Paul when y'all got there?
None. Other than the shotgun that was by Alex's truck that he retrieved from the house, but there were no guns found by Maggie or Paul.
And that gun was given to you by Alex? Given to law enforcement?
It was given to law enforcement by Alec, yes, sir.
Okay, let's, did you have an occasion to talk with the defendant again?
On August the 11th.
Okay. And tell these folks, where that took place?
At the SLED's Low Country Regional Office here in Walterboro.
How far Street. Is that from where we're standing or sitting right now?
2-3 minute drive. Okay. If you're from Walterboro any length of time, it's the old hospital, the old mental health DSS building.
They got y'all in the old hospital in the mental health building?
Yes, sir.
What time was it? The interview.
Interview began approximately 11:09 a.m.
And describe the room interview room, et cetera?
I mean, it's plain walls. There's a table, small conference table, about the size of this desk, and four chairs. Of course, we move the chairs in and out to accommodate the number of people. There's video cameras up on the ceiling to record any interview that occurs in there.
Are the video cameras visible?
Yes, sir.
Show you what's marked states 511, 512, and 513. And just ask you, does that relate to what you're saying right now? Testifying to?
Yes, it does.
Your Honor, 511, 512, and 513, I believe, without objection.
No objection.
You're admitted.
And the same foot in the Elmo. Actually, Judge, I'm going, out of abundance of caution, I'm going to withdraw states 511 without objection, I believe.
I apologize.
511 is withdrawn with the court's permission. Please, this 512 and 513 I'm holding, just tell the folks what this is.
That is the interview room in our Low Country Sled office.
And can you see cameras in there?
Yes, sir. Up in the corners.
Judge, I didn't know if you wanted to take a break. We're going to play the interview now, which may be semi-lengthy, and I just want to bring that to court's attention. I hope you don't mind me saying that.
All right, thank you, gentlemen. We have you go to the jury room for a short break.
That wraps up segment two of our continuing coverage in the trial of Alec Murdaugh. There is more to come on this day. Be sure to press subscribe so you don't miss any of the coverage. You can get a commercial-free experience by signing up through Apple Podcasts. You can even try it for 3 days free. Do check that out. I'm Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand-new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand-new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand-new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand-new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.